I'd like to call this meeting to order of the Reedley Planning Commission for 5 o'clock Thursday, January the 8th. It's a special meeting. So could we please stand for the Pledge of Allegiance? Ready? Salute. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. You may be seated. Ms. Ellen, if you could do the pleasure of the roll call, please. We have a quorum, so we're okay there. Mm-hmm.
Commissioner Barcelos?
Yes.
Commissioner Custodio?
Here.
Commissioner Gutierrez? Commissioner Perez?
Here.
Chairman Hudson?
Here.
If I might, for the benefit of the commission, Commissioner Gutierrez did notify us that due to work conflict, he would not be here this evening.
Okay. So we're all present and accounted for then, except for. Okay, great. Election of officers and annual procedure. Number one, election of the chairperson. This is an issue that's between the four of us tonight. I would like to lead off by nominating for chairperson, if you would allow me, Alberto Custodio, our vice chairman.
So we all get to nominate, or what? Or
how you does say this, you, this is your, this is yours, this is ours. Whatever you guys want to do. I'm just, I nominate you.
You nominate me. So yeah. Then I get to nominate someone?
You can do it.
Let me
repeat myself. You can do whatever you want.
Now, don't make this as long as my report, please.
Yeah, we got to get out of here by now.
I want to go home.
We should all vote for each other or for someone else, and then we'll just have to be here for another 5-10 minutes.
I also have a nomination, if I may.
There you go.
Mr. Hudson, I'd like to nominate you.
There you go.
So we have two nominations. Any comments? You don't have to comment, but any comments?
I'm new enough. I'm just going to say I appreciate you guys' input and say either would be fabulous.
Okay. All right. So do we make a motion?
Yeah. So procedurally, you have made a motion.
Okay.
The
I made a motion.
The question is there a second or did it die of a second?
Let's do this first. I make a motion.
You have made a motion.
To nominate Mr. Alberto.
Mm-hmm.
As the chairperson, okay? Now, at this point, somebody has to second it, and if nobody seconds it, then it dies.
Correct.
Right, okay, that's the procedure. And then if there's a second, we vote, correct?
Correct.
On that motion, all right?
Okay, I understand there's a vote sitting there waiting for a second. I do have a question. As per the chairman currently, are you wanting to step to the side?
I would like to.
Okay.
Yeah, I'd like to. And
okay.
I appreciate Pete's
okay.
nomination, but I'd like to.
Okay, I'll
I've
second
done it
your
two,
nomination
2 years,
then.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, I'll second your nomination.
Okay, we have a second. So then we vote on the...
It's a 1 year. It's a 1 year.
It's a 1 year. It's
he
a
was
one
nominated
year.
Twice.
Right.
Yeah, I'm finished my second year.
We get to do this every year.
Yeah.
We do this every year, correct. That's right. Okay, so we have a second. Okay, now we vote. Okay, all in favor of the motion, say aye. Or do we do a roll call?
No. Either one.
Aye. We say aye. I say aye.
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 Aye. So, and then he gets to vote or abstain?
It doesn't make
it. Doesn't matter. You can say aye. Abstain.
The numbers
it's,
will match.
It's yeah. three to anything
well, just so
he
you,
wants
I don't know
to do
how
no
she,
matter what.
I don't
so.
Know how she records
yeah.
it. Okay. So, motion carries.
I should say nay.
Okay. Yeah, you could.
No.
Okay. So, motion carries. Abstain. Congratulations.
Oh, thank you.
All right. Do we change? Can we
yeah.
change seats
yeah.
at this point?
No. What do you want to do about a vice chair?
Well, does the chair then lead that? Or do
so
I lead
it? So, he can,
does he
however
lead that?
You guys want to do it. He can lead it.
All right. I'll lead it. Okay. At this point, we'd like to entertain nominations for a vice chair. Are there nominations for a vice chair?
How about the guy who isn't here?
Yeah, and remember, we got a guy that's not here.
I nominate Pete.
I would second that. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
You didn't have a chance to say. Opposed? Okay. Carries.
There we go.
All right. Okay. So, now, you had a question about tonight. Is he wanted to know if I could lead it tonight, but he's the chair.
He really should be the chair.
Okay. But he can guide you.
And because we have no audience, we can,
kind
of skip through some of the formalities.
Because I want to take notes, but I guess we can talk later.
Yeah, we can talk.
At a different time.
Yeah.
Okay.
You're there.
Ooh, it's musical chair time.
You're here.
I kind of like this clock. Can I stay here?
I'm in charge of the clock now.
You can stay wherever you want.
Congratulations, Mr. Pete.
Thank you very much, and good job. I really appreciate everything
if
you've done for me.
Were here, you would read the, would read the public comment.
Let's see now, where is the gentleman? I'm down at the end, right? I'll be down at the end so that he can move up there. And then,
thank you, Mr.
Pete. Want me to put it on you? Or?
No,
okay.
Thank you.
I wanted to sit next to Don.
It's colder down there. Yeah. Next to Kevin, it's a lot colder.
Well, I thought it'd be hotter down here.
I don't want to sit next to this guy.
Me either.
Hey, this is kind of nice down here, Pete.
Different view. There you go.
It's pretty cool.
Okay. Well, we can talk about it.
Yeah. So
now we're in the comments, public comment portion of this meeting. So this meeting provides an opportunity for members of the public to address the Planning Commission on items of interest to the public within the Commission's jurisdiction, which not already on the agenda this evening. And we don't have anybody from the public, so we're going to go ahead and close that. Now we go to consent agenda number 3. Is that correct?
Correct.
All right. So the minutes of special meeting of December 4th, 2014, were recommended. The commission has recommended an approval. Does anybody have any issues with that meeting or the minutes? Did everybody get a chance to review?
I was fine with it.
Okay. Do you have a motion to approve?
Make a motion to approve.
I would second that motion.
All right. We got a motion and a second.
So we can do roll call or all in favor?
Okay. Let's do a roll call.
Okay. Commissioner Perez?
Yes.
Commissioner Hudson?
Yes.
Commissioner Barcelos?
Yes.
Chairman Castillo?
Yes. All right. So now we're in the public hearing portion, number 4. So this is staff. Is if that's correct?
Correct.
So I'm right. Okay.
I moved it down.
You have the floor.
Good evening, Chairman, members of the Planning Commission. Ellen Moore, Assistant Planner with the Community Development Department. So the item before you tonight is the first and only tentative parcel map of the year 2014. This is pertaining to a division of land at 1110 South I Street, which is more commonly known as the site of the Reedley Family Apartment Complex. So on the screen that's bounded by the project location is bounded by the red shape on the PowerPoint. And so this is where South I Street kind of curves into Southeast Avenue. So the Reedley Family Apartment Complex was a conditional use permit project that was approved in 2010. As you may recall, it authorized the construction of an 80-unit apartment complex that consists of 5 two-story buildings of 1-bedroom, 2-bedroom, and 3-bedroom apartments, as well as a tot lot and some open space areas and a community center and parking. So since the approval in 2010, the project has been divided into 2 phases. And so the photograph on the slide here shows what it looks like today, literally, because I took the picture today. And so this is the two phases that are separated. So the first phase that was built were the 3 buildings in the southernmost area of the property. So right here, I'm standing near the corporation yard. So I'm kind of standing on South I Street, not where it gets to Southeast Avenue. So as you can see, the first three apartment buildings were built, as well as the community center and the tot lot is currently built. And then all of the parking and the parking drive aisles are constructed now. So So the second phase would technically be the remaining two buildings of the apartment complex. And so that was built and occupied in 2014. And so the project is the tentative parcel map, which is proposing to divide the one lot that's existing now into two legal lots of record that will encompass the two phases of the project. And the primary reason for the division of land is for financial purposes. So the first phase was constructed using grant funds. And so to for the rest of the project to be constructed, the applicant is going to be applying for additional funds, and to make it very clear that the funds will be going to that one parcel only, or that next phase only, they're requesting this division of land. So it'll still be one whole apartment complex, but one will be built on one of the new proposed parcels, and then the existing phase will be on another parcel. So to kind of visually represent that, this is the site plan of the conditional use permit that was submitted in 2010 and approved. So these are the five buildings, the parking lot, and the tot lot is that circular piece kind of in the center. And so basically what they're doing is they're proposing to just split the lot around the buildings so that the conditional use permit is still valid. And so all they would need to do is come in and pull building permits for the second phase. By dividing it this way, the setbacks and the property development standards for that zone district will still be complied with. So they'll still be consistent with the zoning ordinance and the general plan. So this is the more technically accurate parcel map that was submitted to the city. So this, the line that's kind of cutting through the existing parcel, that's where the divisions will be. And I did want to note that in the conditions of approval, this is attached to resolution 2014-14. And one of the conditions of approval is, because this was approved as an apartment complex on the whole through the conditional use permit, dividing them would require a cross-access agreement to be executed between the two parcels. And so basically what that means is that if a tenant is living on the on parcel A, which is the northern parcel, and they wanted their kids to play on the tot lot, or they wanted to drive through to go out of the other entrance, because there's two points of access here. So if they wanted to go onto the other parcel, they could legally do so through the cross-access agreement. So that allows access to go back and forth between the two parcels. Because they're proposed to be two separate parcels, but there's still access, and so it still can act as one apartment complex. Other than that, the conditions of approval, pretty straightforward. The proposed land division is consistent with the general plan and the zoning ordinance because it's zoned appropriately and is a high-density residential planned land use designation. This tentative parcel map, the notice of this hearing, was published in the Exponent and mailed to surrounding property owners. And as stated in the staff report and in the attached categorical exemption that's attached to the staff report, this division of land is categorically exempt from CEQA under the minor land divisions section and the infill development project section. So staff's recommendation tonight is to improve the environmental assessment, which is the categorical exemption, and to approve the tentative parcel map application to divide the APN, or the parcel 370-02073, into two parcels of land. And that concludes staff's report. As I said, the conditions of approval are attached to the resolution, and I'll be happy to answer any questions you may have.
I just have some concerns, and these are probably are not significant, but only for my looking long-term vision. My first question to support what I'm about to say is this one ownership? Is
correct.
This single individual, or is it a corporation, or is it a partnership?
It's an LLC. So,
it could be,
common ownership.
Mm-hmm. And My reason for saying that is because if they're dividing this property like that would leave one or the other, should there be a division? Because this would allow, say, we were partners and we sold the place, you take this and I'll take this because of a disagreement. Mm-hmm. Would that put one or the other, because of the way the amenities are set up, cause a hardship on the other one to exist? And pretty soon we have, whatever happens, this may fall apart, and then we've got an empty lot. People walk away from this. Is this something we need to be concerned about? And I'm only asking this right now because there's nobody here. But that's my concern.
Mm-hmm. That is.
Would that be a possibility that could happen?
It could be a possibility, but that's why the cross-access agreement is put in place. So that's something that's recorded with the county that allows that cooperation and the sharing of amenities and sharing of parking and everything. So that is addressed. So if the ownership changes, the new owner would have to enter into that cross-access agreement. So that will always be maintained no matter who owns it or anything like that. So that's how we address that because,
And then the other thing I was getting confused when I was at the site was, where does East Street end and I Street start?
That's a good question. That's a great question.
That's a very good question.
That's a great question. I'm not sure I know the answer.
That's a universal question.
Don't know the answer to that one.
Yeah, that's a good answer.
Yeah.
Pete, going back to your question, one of the requirements of the funding is that the owners of the land, both sides, which are the same, maintain the facility as designed for a period of 50 years. So ownerships could potentially change, but irrespective of that change for financial purposes, it would be maintained as a single unit for a minimum of 50 years. The other component that Alan mentioned, which is really the crux of answering your question, is the cross-access agreement. One of the stipulations in that agreement is that the city is party to that agreement, which means in order for them, say they wanted to do what you said, which is they're going to sever their relationship. The city is party to that, which means they must in fact notify us of that agreement. And the reason the city's party to that is because not only so that pedestrians can legally walk across a property line, but because you have wet and dry utilities that cross those property lines that have to be maintained. So the city at arm's length is party to that agreement to ensure that should there be some financial constraint or financial arrangement that is made, that whomever lives there will be insured access. I mean, you know, somebody couldn't go out and cut a water line. I mean, I think is what you're really asking. And that could never happen for a variety of safeguards with respect to the granting agency, as well as with respect to the cross-access agreement that Alan very astutely put on the project as a condition of approval. So I think that will solve and answer your questions.
Now, is that a question that we would want to ask if there was public people here?
Absolutely.
We can ask any of these.
Absolutely. I think it's a great question. Mm-hmm. And if you'll hold on one second, once we get through this matter, I think I've got something to help give you a little bit more peace of mind on this kind of situation and topic.
Okay.
I think Kevin has answered my question, but I want to ask it just to make sure. This is more of a curiosity thing, and I can't find the reference in here. I saw it the other day, but this property was divided in this fashion, okay? Which is, I see why. Right. It looks logical, but it's not a straight line. And then I think it said something to the effect as per code or something like that.
Correct.
The code, does it go to any issues of how something can be configured, and when you divide property, is there a configuration addressed in that at all, or is it just say, is it silent on how it can be divided? Now, it was divided for this reason, and then we've got these agreements that protects the occupants to a certain degree. I mean, down the road, two owners, one could charge more than the other, right? I mean, realistically. But as far as access, you've taken care of that. Mm-hmm. Does the code go to any? How deep does the code go when you divide property?
Well, when a property is divided, you look at the property development standards. So in this case, the main thing that we looked at here was the setbacks for buildings. So normally in a multiple family area, there's a 10-foot setback, whether it's in the rear yard or the side yard or the front yard. So by dividing this, that created a new setback that had to be fulfilled. Because right now just as the one parcel, you have a 10-foot distance between buildings requirement. So you have that here, that's fulfilled. But if you divide it into two, then that means that there's a 10-foot setback. Yeah.
But mm-hmm. That meets the requirement or doesn't meet?
It does, yeah. Okay. Yeah. So for the distance between buildings, it's not like it wouldn't be 20 feet. You wouldn't add those two together.
You don't have to add them together.
Yeah.
Why not?
Because the 10-foot distance between buildings is just that. It's the distance between buildings.
So a setback doesn't come into play then?
The setback only comes into play based on its relation to the property line. So a setback
is the property line. That's not the that's property line. That new line.
Yeah, that new line is now a property line.
So you don't have to go 10 on each side.
You have to go. Yeah, you go 10 feet. Yeah, you would have to go 10 feet on each. Yes, it does meet that. All right. Mm-hmm.
That's highly irregular, and that's what prompted my thinking was exactly the way it was divided, because it's something we're not used to seeing.
Right.
We're used to seeing squares and stuff, because I thought for a minute when I first looked at it without looking at this, I thought it was just going to be a straight line.
Mm-hmm.
But I can understand why they would also, for financial purposes, why they would want to include those other buildings in there.
Well, I mean, this whole project was phases, right?
Originally it was approved as a whole project.
As a whole project, but financially, they decided, you know what, we can do one part, and then we'll do the next part.
So actually, let me jump in here. So kind of a piece of history. So the project was approved as a whole. The applicant was going after a very specific type of funding. They were not successful with the project as a whole. So then they decided to phase it. When they phased it, for a variety of reasons, it made the project a more competitive project. Therefore, they received funding. Now they wanted to use that same strategy again on the other half. In order to do the other half, that's why they needed to create the separation. They needed to create another legal lot of record. And that's in essence what they've done for.
Is this federal money?
No, it is TCAC money, tax allocation.
We've faced that in Kings Canyon where you had,
if
the money followed, you had to parcel that little tiny spot because the money was only going to that one tiny spot. So you had to parcel it. Okay.
And the design and everything is going to be the same.
Absolutely, everything the same.
From the other buildings to the next. So it's going to look like one whole unit.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Eventually, I mean, it's going to look like one whole, complex apartment. Yeah. So it's not going to be different.
No. And that I think that's a really good question. Mm-hmm. Again, kind of remembering this is a little bit different because this subdivision of land is really predicated on financial constraints, as opposed to your dividing it for future development. So to answer your question, they are obligated, absolutely without a doubt, to, irrespective of the property line, to put those buildings in the location as approved by the governing conditional use permit 446.
Well, Pete's question goes to, and I agree with him, to the issue of protecting the individuals that live there.
Yes, absolutely.
Any more questions?
Okay.
So you guys are comfortable with this?
Very much so.
Mm-hmm. All right, so we have in the public hearing number 4, we have A and B, and we got city requesting that we approve and the resolution. So I'm going to go ahead and go for a vote. Is that okay?
Yeah, if I just may add, sure. That the resolution, so A and B will be approved under one resolution. Mm-hmm. So we can take one action because it's under one resolution, but by taking action, you are both approving the environmental assessment and the tentative parcel map.
Right. Which you provided information on your presentation here.
Yes.
Okay, so we have resolution number 2014-14, mm-hmm. A resolution of the City of Reedley Planning Commission approving tentative parcel map application number 201401 and related environmental assessment number 2014-26 presented by Ellen. I'm going to go ahead and ask for a motion of approval.
I would move that we approve resolution number 2014-14.
I second it.
We have a second. Okay. And now we have the...
Oh, sorry. I got to do a roll call.
I'm sorry.
That's
go ahead.
That's okay. No problem. Commissioner Hudson.
Yes.
Commissioner Perez.
Yes.
Commissioner Barcelos.
Yes.
Chairman Custodio.
Yes. All right. So now we move to the workshop presented by Mr. Fabino.
So yeah, is this a two-day workshop?
Could get a
break for lunch, dinner?
Dinner, exactly. That's what I had in mind.
As new chairman, I'm going to limit Mr. Fabino from now on for about 12 minutes. It's probably going to be the best.
You will not be able to do
no,
that.
No, I know.
You will not. Good luck.
Actually, you know, I am always up for a good challenge.
A good challenge. 12 minutes.
So, Mr. Chairman, members of the Planning Commission, it's always a privilege to stand and kind of present information to you. This evening, we are going to talk and give you kind of a little bit of an overview about the Development Impact Fees Program. There was an article in today's paper. Thought it was pretty darn good, and I thought Jody did a really good kind of overview.
Did you ask to put that in there?
No, actually, we have already started down a process that involves some information you'll see tonight that was presented to the City Council. And so we want to present it to you because as we move forward, eventually you will be reviewing information, giving staff feedback that will be looked at and then passed on to the City Council as for their consideration. That being said, we're going to give you kind of the same presentation, a little bit more refined, because we know you kind of like that information, with respect to development impact fees. Kind of the hows, the whys, a little bit more nuts and bolts. They're things that you have already seen. When we give, for example, an applicant, their conditions of approval, those are all wrapped into it. So you are intimately involved and you've seen those things. Maybe you didn't recognize it, but they always come before you. So in starting my presentation, we always start with the single most important premise. And it is the staff's belief, and we think it's your belief, and we believe that it is the City Council's belief that development should pay its own way. If you differ from that, let us know right now. But we believe that it is your direction to us that development should pay its own way. Development should not come to this city and be the burden of the existing residents. That's just kind of the foundation we start from. And again, if we want to debate that, we can. This is the time to do it. But we really do think that and I kind of put it in context, you know, that when development comes to the city and they need a new light for traffic, or the water plant needs to be expanded. It should not be at the expense of the residents, and they shouldn't. We shouldn't be increasing their monthly water bills so that development can have its way, right? That's what I'm really referring to. Hopefully putting that in a little bit more context.
Are you inviting a comment on that now, or should we wait till the end?
It's up to you. I mean,
okay.
Is it more of a comment, or is it a debate? You want to debate?
No, it's not a debate. Right. It's a comment. I agree. I like what Nicole said in the paper. I think she said it very well. And in principle, I do agree. But is that comment because you guys are getting pressure to do it differently? That's one comment or one question. The other, I know there's neighboring cities that don't do it that way, right?
Exactly.
And this is the mantra that I think for the most part this city has had, right? Is it being restated, or is it being said, is it going to be done differently?
All the above, Ron. So let me walk through, and there are some points that I will look at you and go, here it is, you know, because there are some points that are really critical to understand and how this is all being put together that I think goes to your question. But I think generally speaking, there is a fundamental belief that development, when it comes to this community, should pay its own way, period. That being said, development impact fees. They are illegal. They are embedded in law, we commonly refer to them as AB 1600. It was legislation passed in 1987. You'll find it in Government Code 66,000. And basically what it did was it identified a mechanism which allows cities to go through a process and create fees to help. It's a fee that we charge developers based on their impact. The idea is, again, as they come into the city and they have impacts on water and sewer and streets and signalization, that we have a mechanism to recover those costs. It's basically, if you will, the second bullet point talks about public financing mechanism. That's really what it is. We've identified projects that are going to be needed. Those projects have to be funded. This is the mechanism to fund it. The way we do that is things that have come before this commission. We have a general plan that talks about growth, where it will occur, and how it will occur, right? Remember that whole discussion about colors on the general plan map represent certain kinds of things. So we have projections as to how many people the city will grow by every year. We know where it's going to grow and how it's going to grow. The companion to that then becomes the integrated master plans, which have gone to council. I think we talked to you about those. Those identify the projects which are necessary to support the growth in the general plan. In order to accomplish that, we need to finance it in some way. One of the things that the impact fee does in law is it determines what is defined as a reasonable relationship between the fees and the type of projects. So it's really easy, generally speaking, to talk about a project. Hey, it's going to happen at Buttonwillow and Manning. There is nothing there. It is absolutely new. They should pay, again, for their impacts on the city and the infrastructure. There's also another component, which is the nexus and the pro rata share. And we'll talk a little bit more in depth about those in just a second. Because there is impacts to the city. Basically, if we have to upsize a water sewer line, right? A water or sewer line. How does that get paid for? And what's their pro rata share of upsizing that? The community's already paid for it once. Now it's got to be upsized. Those folks pay for that proportionality of upsizing it. Really, when we talk about development impact fees, and this is really the part that I think is important for you, Ron, in addressing and kind of answering the question that you posed, is it is a teeter-totter. And it is finding that balancing place and where that fulcrum is. You know, I started out, should development pay its own way? If the community wants no development fees at all, but understands that the way water and wastewater plant is expanded is increase monthly base rates, because that's what we have here, then we can do that. Mm. But understand, you, sir, would then be paying for the impact of somebody else's new project. And there's an equity question there. Here's the other thing. And I put this piece in there because I think it's really important. When I start talking about, in a few minutes, when I start talking about kind of what the next steps are and where we are in the process, I want it to be really clear, and we've told the council this, we have no preconceived outcome. In a couple minutes, we're going to talk about a project list. That project list is going to be kind of the basis for fees that will eventually be calculated. We never sat down and said the fees are this, we have to have projects equal to that fee. We never sat down and said, oh, you know what, we're going to bolster all the projects so that we can collect a whole bunch of money up front, and so we will have it when the projects hit. We never did anything like that at all. We sat down as a staff and said, in the next 5 to 7 years, these are the projects we think are going to be really critical, and that's what we presented to the council. So you asked the question about, is this in response to others? No, it is not. You know, the process is what is reasonable and prudent in that planning horizon. What's existing and what's new development? This is a really important concept to understand. Once new development comes in, or once development is new, once it's constructed, it's no longer new. Which means the other communities, when a new house gets built and they waive those fees, they no longer have any opportunity to ever collect fees to offset the impacts of that new house.
Well, Kevin, with that being said, do you feel that when developers look at Reedley, they, because of the way they do their fee structure, that they look at Reedley differently than towns that do it just the opposite and allow taxes or water, sewer rates to increase? Do they?
No.
No. Okay.
No. It is the position. We've bantered this one back and forth. No. Impact fees are a part of doing business when you develop. What makes a developer come to Reedley versus Sanger has nothing to do with the fees.
The reason I asked that question was because someone else said other towns in close proximity to us do it so very differently than us. Is that correct? And so I wanted to know, does that make people that are in a developer spot view Reedley so much different than these?
No.
That was why I asked that question.
We do not believe that.
Okay.
And I disagree with... Oh, go ahead.
Hold on. Where we hang our hat is... One of the things that we have done in this department under my reign of terror, if you will, is we believe the most important aspect to development is the one thing that can never be recovered. You know what it is? Time. Mm. And if you think about how development works, and if you know how development works, because it's based on money, it is a huge negative impact to a developer when I stand up and go, hey, you know what? On February 2nd, we're going to take your project to Planning Commission, and it'll all be good. And I call them 2 days before and go, oh, you know what? Sorry, dude, we missed something. Or, you know, there's some problem out there that we didn't know, and we're going to kick you 2 weeks or a month. That can represent hundreds of thousands of dollars to that developer. So what we have done is we have said, look, the fact of the matter is, if I promise you a date, I got to get you there. That's my job. That's what they can't do. I can tell you, you know, developers, our application fees, no big deal. They pay double, triple. Time is what they can't do. Because what you have to understand is, if I tell them on the 2nd, they're already making construction draws on the 3rd to make something happen, which means they're moving forward. Or what happens is the bank won't give them their money because you don't have entitlements. Well, if they are scheduling to take down land and miss those dates, it costs them $10,000, $20,000, $30,000, $50,000, $100,000 because it creates an extension. So time is the most critical aspect. It's not money. Because I got bad news for everybody. The developer isn't paying for the impact fee. The homeowner is. So he's passing it on to them.
Yeah, it's just passing from this category to, oh, it's yours now.
At the end of the day, it's all got to pencil. No matter how you slice or dice it. Okay, I can show you. You can go and we talk about the quality of life regularly. The quality of life, we believe, is a tenfold over Sanger. We have a great school district. And we also have the safest community in all of Fresno County. Can Sanger make that same claim? I don't think so. So for us, it's not about money. It's about time. Now, are there things that we can do to help developers with respect to development impact fees? Can we defer them till time of occupancy? Absolutely. Are we willing to do that? Are we willing to have them do work in which they can receive credits? Absolutely. But at the end of the day, in Sanger, at some point in time, if they bring 100 homes on, they're going to need a stoplight, and they're going to need roads, and they're going to need sewer, and who's going to pay that? And we just philosophically believe it's not fair and equitable to make the people of Reedley, who have already paid for that, pay for somebody else's impacts to the community. Sorry for the impassioned speech, but that's kind of what it kind of comes down to. The question of I could get really kind of nasty about this and go, I can tell you 5 projects right now that we have out-of-town folks that, you know, we tell them, hey, these are development impact fees. They don't even balk. They go, okay, we get it. And most of the rhetoric we're hearing is concern from kind of local developers or builders going, oh, they're too high, they're outrageous. They're really not. They're really not. Are we being competitive with our neighbors? We believe we are. And we've built into this process a way to make sure that that's addressed as we move down the road through this process. What we're really trying to do, I thought this was a great slide. I love it. What we're really trying to do is not make this scary math. We're trying to simply say between the next 5 to 7 years, we know what the growth is, we know what the projects are, we distribute the growth, you know, the project costs across that growth, those what the fees are going to be, whatever they are. I have never asked the developer where they think the project fees or where the fees will be based on the projects that we have. Again, no preconceived notions. So this is kind of moving into a little bit more detail. We think you'd probably appreciate this. This is a great example of new development. Here it is. It's the countryside. It's not Reedley. It is close to Reedley after it rains. But the point being is we thought this was just a really good example of the nexus of fee. There is nothing there, and you want to build, you should pay for all the roads, the sewer, everything to make that development happen in that location. Let's talk about pro rata share. So here is an example. This actually comes straight out of the integrated master plan. So this is a real live example. It comes from the storm drain section, and it proposes that you can see right in the center, basin K is a new basin. All the yellow should pay for that basin. But the green with the blue lines in it is where there's existing development and there's actually existing lines that will eventually tie to basin K. They should only pay their proportionate share of that basin, not the whole thing. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. Because they're already there. Kind of walk you through history a little bit. In June of 1994, basically ordinance number 94014 was passed. It was the first impact fee system that you have. What's really interesting about this, and I tried to line it up a little bit, the way the development impact fees were structured were, for example, and I'll use water as a really good example, there's water supply holding facilities. Those were the costs. They broke it down to a very finite and fine grain of salt when they did their analysis. And they said, okay, for water supply holding, they projected the cost to make sure that the treatment plant, wells, water wells, were drilled sufficiently enough and in a timely enough manner to make sure that there was supply that was adequate. There was another development impact fee category called water distribution facilities. The two shall never touch each other, but if we needed to put a pipe in the ground and we needed upsize, we didn't have enough money in one, but a lot of money in the other, kind of what's happened in Park and Rec. Park and Rec has a lot of money in one and not enough in another, and they really balance themselves out. Water, the wastewater, same kind of thing, where you've got treatment and collection. So one of the things we're going to do is we're going to combine those into bigger units. And we're going to look at it as a project on the whole, not this kind of micro perspective. Again, the building blocks. In May of 2014, we had the City Council discussed and approved the capital improvement plan. That plan basically looked at projects and funding sources. They prioritized projects that were near term and then identified projects that were in the longer term. And we have the integrated master plans, which was from June of 2014 was approved. And then, of course, we went through a lengthy process, and in August of 2014, we hired David Tosick and Associates, and we issued them a professional service agreement to do the update. Again, our project assumptions is that the city is committed to reviewing and updating the development impact fees on a more frequent basis, really about every 5 to 7 years. The last time this was done was in 2003. The project list is consistent with the technical studies. I provided you with that, the list of projects, and I'll kind of walk you through that in just a second. But basically, we didn't make any of it up. Every project that is on there came from the integrated projects and is based in some technical study that the council and the public have had an opportunity to look at, view, and weigh in. The project addresses near-term development impacts to public infrastructure. So we're looking at 5 to 7 years. We're not looking 20, 30, 40, 50 out. I don't think that's a good way to look at public infrastructure, because we think it really skews it and increases costs in maybe not a positive way. The list does incorporate proportionate impacts of new development. So, for example, we know Reed Avenue, the sewer line's just tremendously undersized. In order to upsize that, that proportionate share, not the whole project, is what's been included in looking at with respect to the formula and the analysis is being generated to justify the fee. The project list is reasonable and achievable. We think that's really important. And we have lists of projects that go back to 2003, the last time this was done. And for a variety of reasons, those projects never got completed. So we tried to structure this in a way so that at the end of 5 to 7 years, we will have collected the money and the projects will actually be moving forward. We wanted to see tangible outcomes at the end of the 5 to 7 year period. Again, the project list was not artificially inflated to overburden development in any way. I mentioned to you that council reviewed this. We took this to council, the project lists that are before you, on December 9th and the 22nd. We received comments from the public. The council received comments from the public on those projects. And as you heard on the 22nd, I think Tony Jewell stood up and said, yay, move ahead. But during that meeting, the council also asked for some additional projects to be added, and those were done as well. On December 22nd, the council finalized that project list, which has been since been turned over to the council to develop the nexus and fee study and the allocation of cost to new development. So let's talk about next steps and kind of where we're at, and then I'll kind of, I think I've got another 3 minutes left. No, I'm just kidding. next steps. Our consultant is preparing the demographic analysis, which is to look at what is the reasonable growth that's going to occur within the next 5 to 7 years. They will then work on distributing the costs of the projects that we have in front of you to that growth model, and that will tell us where we're at. The initial report we hope to be in our hands by the end of deliver to staff by January, early February. I put up here this last point called this decision tree. It's if then. If, for example, staff gets the report, because we've heard from both you and the community and the council about where, and what we have told the council is, and I'm just gonna pick my example. You know, they really don't want the fees to go up. Great, we understand that. That's a fantastic goal to have. So if we get this report and it says, hey, in these categories, you're looking at a 50% increase in development impact fees, then staff's probably going to go back to the council and say, here's what the report is tending to lead towards. Is this really your goal, or do you want to remove some projects? Great. You remove some projects, maybe the goal is, you know, it'll take you to this level. Conversely, it could be something that, my goodness, you know, you're 50%, you would be reducing your fees by 50%. We may go back to the council and go, is this really what you were intending? Do you want to add some projects? Again, I go back to, you know, the question you asked earlier, which is so good, Ron, no preconceived notions. where do you want this to end up at the end of the day? It could be, hey, you know what? All the projects that that the council approved, you'll achieve all that with the growth and what's projected, and you'll have a legally defensible project, and there'll be no fee increase. You know what? That'd be the best of all worlds, and we'll bring it back to you, and we'll take it on to the council, and everybody will be happy. I don't know how it's going to shake out, because we've not wanted to, again, predispose ourselves to any kind of outcome. This is really one of many steps in looking at the city's financial mechanisms and how all this is put together. That being said, a couple things I can tell you. The projects that are before you are, again, what the council approved, what the basis of the project lists are there, and what the analysis is going to be based on. Again, whether it's transportation, law enforcement, the fire, parks and rec, storm drains, I mean, they're all coming out of the master plans. So we'll know in the future how this is all going to shake out. And again, you'll be party to all of this as we move forward. We'll get the consultant here who can give you even more detail about the demographic analysis or the project analysis, whatever the case may be. Is this helpful to you to give you some context and, I guess I just close with this comment. Ellen and I sit before developers every single day. We met with one this morning. And we have taken the position, and you've heard me say this before, if you're not bringing us your very best project, there's a door. So to sit in one breath, say, bring us your very best project because the city of Reedley expects nothing but the best and we want high quality development, and then turn around and go, but we're going to give away the farm so you'll come development, is really kind of a juxtaposition for us. Development impact, in as many years as I've been doing this, development impact fees are not what make or break a project. It's going to be the land price. That's a private, capitalism, catch it. That's going to be, will the market, fill the spaces once they get built, if it's a commercial development or whatever the case may be. Will homes sell? And I keep going to homes. We're all excited. We got four new starts this month. There are no new homes being built. Those are things we want. And we're going to get there. But this is just one step along the way. Pete, you had a question. What can I answer for you?
I'll revoke my question.
Did I answer it?
No.
Okay.
But I'm good with it. I will pass.
You sure? Ron, did I answer your question?
I think the best you could, yeah. So this really isn't a shift in either direction. You're just saying this is who we are.
Well,
In other words, it's not changing anything. In effect, conversations that you have with potential developers.
We have not, I guess.
It's memorializing it, and looking ahead. You're letting us know what your conversations are with the developer.
Yeah, let me kind of. I mean, again, in all the years I've been doing this, you're a school teacher. I really didn't want to do my homework, so the excuse was the dog ate it. And we'll all kind of go like, really? It's the same thing in the development game. you know, a guy who's not willing to pay $900,000 for an acre and a quarter in a particular place in the city, he's not going to go to the guy who owns the land and go, you know, you're just way overpriced. He's going to turn around and go, oh, well, you know, I would have developed, but it's the city who's got the high impact fees. I can't make a pencil. See that all the time. And we've talked about this in this venue about, you know, I am extremely concerned because I hear from the council, I hear from the community, I hear from business owners. They want businesses to come into this community. They want to grow and expand. But there's no land. Business models have to change. We've talked about businesses that have wanted to come to Reedley, but the landowners' models didn't mesh. That's not a city issue. That's not a development impact fee issue. We've got national tenants knocking on our door. Today we got one, came in, put their application in, wanting to be here. Impact fees are not a deterrent. They are not.
I think the problem is perception. And mm-hmm. we all face this, and I think Don probably has to face it. I'm anxious to hear what she has to say, that there's a perception, and I've addressed it as best I can, that the grass is greener someplace else because the developer is getting a break up front. Okay? And the thing, I think one of the best things you communicated here, for me at least, is that impact fees are a very, very small portion of any total development cost. Okay. That's not going to prevent. There are other factors. The land, the numbers, the traffic patterns, you described it as time, but how you guys, you and Ellen, deal with them. Those are major factors. Some of them are quantitative, some of them are not. But the perception is, I don't know how to communicate it to the public. And we've had this talk too.
Yeah.
You know, the impact fee or what happens to the developer when they walk in your door is really what's going to bring them to town. And you've said over and over, that's not what brings them to town. But that still is the perception out
right
there.
So that's the easy perception, because the real question that nobody has asked, but Nicole, my boss, who I love dearly, had the guts, if you will, to stand up and throw the gauntlet down and say, see, it's really easy to go, oh, it's impact fees that are stopping everybody. Okay, so can anybody tell me what Sanger has? What has Sanger gotten that is so superior and directly related to their giveaway of impact fees?
Is it the fact that they have available space?
Tell me the project. Tell me the
But their home in new home development is faster than ours. But I know why. It has to do with their location. It's proximity to Fresno Unified, so kids don't go to Fresno Unified. Mm-hmm. I know that. I've seen their numbers. Mm-hmm. I've seen their growth. Sanger Unified grew 9% in 1 year. Okay? That's just because we're here and they're located there.
Yeah, it is.
And that perception grew with their industrial park as well. That's where it started, really, when they started giving impact fees away in the development of that park.
And is the park full?
No, but that's all we hear, though,
right.
Kevin.
Is the park?
That's what we hear, is that they did this, therefore they have a blank.
Right.
I'm not saying it's better.
Right. Yeah.
So that's, I guess...
I'm not here to say it's better. I like living here.
And one of the
want to live in Sanger.
One of the reasons that was impacted and that perception developed is because they were dealing with smaller businesses.
Yeah. I think this administration's really worked hard to change a lot of those perceptions, mm-hmm. Ron.
No, that's true.
About
it's a big nut to crack
though. Yeah, about just we're a better community. And we just kind of, you know, at least from the staff side, really think it's unfair to charge all, you know, all of you double your base rate, for water, so that, you know, Joe Developer can come in and develop. Because that's, in essence, what happens. And, you know, Nicole and I have had huge amounts of conversation. Cities, and she uses the term, grow your way into prosperity.
Mm-hmm. That's really what you have to do.
It is. But it's not. Well, because the truth of the matter is, and it's well-known fact, like, for example, oh, everybody wants residential. Well, residential doesn't pay, the tax base doesn't pay to support the services it consumes.
It needs.
So it's got to be a bigger picture. This is one element of a whole strategy. I mean, we started economic development 2 years ago. When I walked through the door, not one project on the desk. I'll be surprised if I don't turn my colleague here gray in the next 2 years. We've got 30 projects going because we've gone out and we've professed the quality and we've guaranteed time. And really, our fees are so cheap.
Well, I think that's one thing we might be able to, in a 30-second sound bite, get out there to the public, our right. comparison in impact fees. And then I like the idea that an impact fee in total development is only, I don't know, what percent would you say it is, roughly? Just, I won't quote you.
You know, I have no
is
idea.
Is it small? I mean, really small?
It's a cost of business.
I would not, just looking at impact fees, I would think it's very small to a development.
It is. We think it is.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it's really easy, and I've heard the... Like, I'll tell you, I've heard this before, and I know for a fact, and I'm going to tell you about it in a minute. The 40-acre development is going to have about $8 million in development impact fees. Oh, my gosh, that's a huge amount of money. Well, yeah, it's a huge amount of money, but how big is the project?
But that's what we have to, in 30 seconds, communicate, that it's a very...
It is a very
small... It's 10%, 15%. That's what will be communicated at the coffee shop.
Yeah. And so that 40-acre parcel on $8 million in development, that's probably $100 million in development, at least, by the time they get all the buildings, all the single, when it's fully built out, it's at least $100 million.
On the other side of the coin, and I don't propose we go there because I've had this discussion with people, but it probably doesn't happen, but let's say there's no impact. And you rely upon something that Don alluded to earlier. If you bring them to town, then they're going to spend money. And the sales tax and whatever taxes will foot the bill for these services.
Well, it benefits many of us along the way. And
right.
I think sometimes general community doesn't realize the benefit in that three times within local businesses,
right.
What that does for us. You know,
is there a way to? I'm just thinking out loud. Is there a way to quantify that? That if there's a town that has no, if we had no impact fees, and it did generate X amount in what? What's the other sales tax and what other ways do you get money?
Property tax.
Well,
all right. At that end of it, is a dollar amount. At the beginning, is a dollar amount. It probably is not too far apart. I mean,
it's tremendously far apart.
I'm sorry, that's what I meant to say. It's probably
so,
tremendously far apart. That's
right,
what I meant to say.
Right now, if I remember correctly, and I think I'll probably be pretty darn close, the integrated master plans that we produced or had produced says that the existing condition deficiencies would take about $63 million.
Okay, that's a good number.
Where does that come from?
Yeah, where is it going to come from and when?
And when?
See, I think the when is a key factor.
Yeah. So
are there towns that say no impact fees?
Yeah, well, you know.
Are there truly?
Yeah, Sanger is one of them.
Okay.
But here's the...
They have had tremendous population growth because of their location.
But
and that probably generates something, right?
So let me ask you this. I want to change the context of that whole, your whole line of thinking. Because I understand what you're saying.
No, I'm reflecting what I hear.
Okay, so let me put it to you maybe in a different way. Do you trust government to... do you trust local government, generally speaking, to give something away with the idea that you're going to have to make it up somewhere down the line? 5, 10 years, you need a street light.
You need more police. You need...
Do you? Well, let's just kind of keep it really simple. You're going to give away development impact fees. A new light is about $400,000. And you know you're going to need that light in 4 to 5 years. Do you, as a planning commission, and or the general public, or you individually, think that government, local government, and we have a really good one here, has the fiscal constraint to put that money away from whatever source it could come from, to where at the end of 5 years, that money would be sitting there ready to go?
Now that took you longer than 30 seconds to explain. That's a good explanation for our classroom, but that's not what we face out there in the public.
But it is what you face, Ron, because...
But they want... I get it. I get the logic. But... They're still, they're growing, and we're not. Growing in what? Like you say, growing in crime, too, because they haven't caught up. My argument now would be, if they have no impact fee, and they're trying to capture it down the road, they're behind in their ability to keep up with crime. Okay, that took 10 seconds.
Yeah. I guess I'd also say this. I apologize, maybe I'm wearing a little bit on the end of my shirt sleeve, but, I'm often asked, well, how come Dinuba got Tractor Supply? Because they've had an economic development plan that they have been working on for 10 plus years. How does Sanger get to do it? And you were exactly right. Proximity to Fresno, bedroom, all those kinds of things play into it. They've been working on something for 7 to 10 years.
Sanger.
Yeah. I got two and a half at best. And we're doing really, really good. But we're not there yet.
Can you tell us how long we went without an individual in that economic development spot?
Ever. Forever. I mean, there's been economic... Well, so it's hard to say because...
It's been in somebody's job description.
It's
kind of folded in.
But not to the extent these guys are putting towards.
But not... I would say it has not been as transparent and demanding as it has been since I got here.
I see.
A plan. Yeah.
How are you going to do that? I guess I'd look at all of you. You've been around a long time, far longer than I have. When was the last time you went on a tour? Like we took everybody around, or we've brought plans to you, or we talk about the development, or here's what's going on, or those kinds of things. It kind of fell into your lap, but I don't know if there's been quite the strategy and the emphasis. And we got locals, developers mad at us right now because we're moving ahead.
What do you mean upset?
Well, I think we're just kind of in a situation that this is, when you look at the fee increases, you look at the cost of doing business, You know, it's not like it was 20 years ago.
Well, that it's gone up for everyone. Let's be honest. That's a given.
You know, the way we develop and the way we treat businesses and the way we treat development is probably really different today than it was in years past. You've got a 40-acre project that's coming to you because I sat and looked the man in his eyes and said, who had grown up on that 40-acre parcel, and said, this is your legacy. What would you like it to be? And he described a fantastic project as opposed to, no, this is what's on the map. We're trying to evolve and meet the interests of the community and grow and provide great services and not ask you to double or triple your monthly base of water or sewer. You know, make the guy who's coming into town pay for what he is doing, you know. Now, I've been way too passionate, but let me share this with you. One of the things that the consulting team is charged with, it was part of the RFP, it was part of their contract, is to provide the analysis and comparison of how we are to other cities.
That would be very helpful.
So I've been asked, well, what's it going to be? Well, one is there's no preconceived notion, I don't know. And this is one of those where you really kind of don't want to keep up with the Joneses. My goal would be we're in the middle. We're not the highest. We're not the lowest. But give us apples to apples as best as they can. You know, how do we stack up? And it's very specific communities. So I didn't want to know how we compare to Orange Cove or Parlier. You know, the comparison will be to like cities. Tell us how we compare to Selma and Sanger and Kingsburg and Fowler so that it is truly a more...
That would be very helpful.
True comparative as opposed to, you know, gosh, you know, pick five communities that are way smaller than us and skew the whole thing. But they're not the ones we're competing for projects. Mm-hmm. 180, when it comes out to Frankwood, huge. Mm-hmm. When that happens, it will be big.
Well, that added as well to Sanger's prosperity. The 180 construction or the project proposed for the project.
It will help us.
An academy.
An academy. And to be honest, I have a lot of friends that live in Fresno. They love Reedley. They come and visit me and they're like, we talk about Sanger and they're like, I don't want to live in Sanger.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we do talk about, well, they have a Walmart. Well, they actually, Walmart didn't have to build. It was already an existing, you know, property there. And if you really think about it, nothing really has grown around that. Like in normal locations that Walmart builds, like in Dinuba, all that is growing because that's what it brings. You go to North Clovis, that's what it brings. It hasn't really done that for Sanger, and there's a reason for that. There is high crime there. There is a lot of issues there that we deal with in my personal, you know, job. And so... You know, I guess it sometimes I do think about that. I do pass by there a lot, and I don't even know where that industrial park is at. And what is that doing for the community anyway?
I will also say this, Ron, you know, and all of you, you asked the question about what differentiates communities. So I have sat at lunch with council members and developers, and our council members are fantastic. They are fantastic. It probably sounds funny, but it is true. We read about what goes on in council meetings in other cities, and I'll just leave it at that. About you know what I'm talking about. I'll just leave
my soundbite, when they want to compare, I say, okay, crime and then the disruption that you're talking about in Sanger. Those are the two things I use. And then completely empty. Totally empty, half-built housing developments in Dinuba.
Yeah.
Is this what you want?
That's an example. Yeah.
Okay, that's not quantitative, but some more quantitative would help, though.
Yeah. We'll get there. We're at an early stage, and everybody got really excited about all this. And we're very methodically taking this.
Well, I had one of the real estate guys give me a number a couple years ago of the inventory, housing inventory in Dinuba. It was extraordinarily high. I mean, mm-hmm. And that's why their prices are low. That's why we were losing kids from Kings Canyon Unified to go to Dinuba. Yeah. They're one of the faster growing school districts because their housing prices are low.
Yep.
But there's a price you pay for that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm going to tell you, there's a couple friends that I know there's no houses here to buy. So they look elsewhere.
Inventory, yeah.
It's somewhere inventory. That's close enough to commute into.
They don't want to move over there because of the neighborhoods. It's like, wait, it's half empty. Yeah. It's a beautiful home.
You drew a nice picture right there of the teeter totter right there.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
All right. Thank you, Kevin.
Hey, thanks for keeping him under 3 hours.
I will say this. I do apologize to the commission for my passion because we live this every day, and it is a little frustrating when we hear from developers that come to this community how great this community is and how they love the things that we do here. I mean, if you could have seen Tara's, she's a civil engineer, doing what I'll tell you about Les Schwab. Les Schwab submitted their applications today. And when we said, hey, your plans were really, really good. Can we put them up on our website as an example of what the expectations of Reedley are? I mean, she was glowing. So all the right things we believe, but we live it every day. So we get passionate.
Have to have some good sound bites until we get to where you want to be. Yeah.
And we live in a society that we want to see things now.
Instantly. Yeah, I know.
And if it hasn't been in place in those 10 years, what are we supposed to expect?
Well, I think they're wondering, is that just going to fade off into the abyss since nothing has happened in 10 years? Yeah. That's a longer measurement for a lot of people. Yeah. Not in economic development, we will say.
Right.
You know.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Kevin. Now you're going to give us a little quick report of community development.
I have a list that's very short, and I'm going to rip right through it. I wanted to report about the sports park. We've talked a couple of times about the idea and the potential of the sports park being a ponding basin. That will not occur. I want to make sure that get that out on the record and follow up. Hydrologically, it did not work out. So that kind of took care of that. There was a question about the pub. They came in today, got their business license. They were working with, they were delayed a little bit because of the health department. Not because of them, but things related to health department requirements. But it's our understanding within the next day or two, they'll be open. I mentioned that Les Schwab came in today. We're very excited.
And when they do that, Kevin, does that mean they have a particular location in mind, or it's a general application?
No, they have a so when we get an application, it is site specific.
Oh, okay.
They've identified a place. They have given us a site plan. As a matter of fact, one of the components of their project is a map, a tentative map, like what you saw tonight, that will come before you. It's not a general, here's what we think. And I will say this, we know they were coming. We talked to Lee's. They were perfectly fine, not an issue at all.
To hear that.
Yes.
Yeah. For local business who has been so supportive of Reedley.
I talked to Robert, and Robert's comment, quote unquote, was, I welcome the competition. So.
A little different.
It is a little bit different.
Yeah. Have they secured
Go ahead.
Have they secured a property?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's a done deal.
Yeah, that's a done deal.
Really?
That's awesome.
Actually, the truth of the matter is, no, they've not secured the property, but they have agreements for their agreements already in place.
They're where they need to be in order to make the application.
Yes. Okay. And I'll tell you about that in a minute, where they're at.
Did they discuss volume with you?
No.
Just curious.
We have, I've done several Les Schwab projects, and, you know, it's the thing that's really interesting about economic developments, and I've learned, the first thing you have to do is understand what somebody's business model is. So, for example, Les Schwab, one, it's family-owned. Mm-hmm. So it's a corporation, but it's family-owned. A manager in any Les Schwab has been with Les Schwab a minimum of 10 years. So that says a lot about how they conduct their business. Les Schwab's business model is they do not think that there's not an expectation to make money, if you will, or break even within the first 5 years. It's a little bit different model because they're in it for the long haul. Very, very few. If you look at the closure rate, it is like next to none. So there's all kinds of things that go into those business models. Just like somebody asked me the other day, how could the city let Ace open up? Well, what do you mean? Mm. Well, how, you know, hey, Reedley Lumber was Ace. Okay, well, the story there is Ace Hardware or Reedley Lumber had it through their corporate agreement, had to give their permission to allow the other Ace to open up. And you had to understand that in that agreement, there's non-competing merchandise. So, you know, there's all kinds of things that go into these deals that are like beyond all of us. And
people don't know that.
And people don't know
and
that.
And people perception. Make a... right. decision to make an opinion, and what they don't realize is when they repeat that, it actually hurts commerce.
Yeah. So anyway, okay, so that's
their model. You know where their home office is?
Somewhere in the Midwest, but I don't remember.
No, it's Bend. It's outside of Bend, Oregon.
Bend, Oregon.
Prineville. It's a dinky. The family lives in a dinky town in Prineville, Oregon, outside of Bend. My son knows has met the family. They are. I mean, they are
for Ace.
No,
or for Les.
Schwab.
Yeah, I heard they're a good company.
Yeah.
They are. That is family.
Yeah. The
is that something that's public?
It is now. They submitted their application.
Okay.
And the location too, is that public?
Yeah, it's right on the other side of Accelerate. Right on Manning.
Okay.
And they're really excited.
Wait, empty lot?
Empty lot.
So
Otani property?
Yeah, it's Otani property.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Wow. That's big.
That's big.
See, people see that?
Yes.
They see new development, ooh. And then,
especially the entryway.
That's interesting. Yeah. That's a very big deal.
We have received an application for the 40-acre parcel. It's a mixed-use project. It's actually right next to the sports park. It'll have commercial, office, several types of housing stock to it. And we'll bring that forward, and I'll be meeting... I've got a little bit more work to do with the applicant to get their application to really where it needs to be, but we're still moving ahead. And over the next couple weeks, I'll be visiting with all the commissioners over that project so you'll know what's going on. With respect to, we're pretty excited. In February, we will have the hearing for the Triangle with LAFCO. And so once that gets brought into the city, I'll actually be sitting down with Alt Irrigation District and finalizing grant stuff in the next couple weeks. And so we'll go out and get some grant money and build the basin and make that. And Dobkins will move out there, and the fire training facility move out there. So that'll all be really good. The land acquisition with the Croslands, you know, we talked about that. That is off the table. That, unless there's a change of heart, and we just weren't able to make that deal work.
That irrigation ditch, is that the Triangle boundary?
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The bridge, you saw pictures in the paper. It's going well. No problems.
Thought I'd see your picture.
Oh, no. I stay bridge. Far away from that.
Don't jump.
Yeah. I do want to ask if the commission, something of the commission. I did want to do it while you were deliberating the issue of the tentative parcel map. I've done a number of trainings, CEQA, you know, you may remember the color of the map, the numbers, all that stuff. Tonight was actually the first tentative parcel map that I've been party to while I've been here. We have several parcel maps. There's one coming for Les Schwab. We've got a tentative track map coming. I thought maybe at the next commission, I know it was we had not had anything scheduled, but maybe that would be a good opportunity for me to give you a little training about how land is subdivided and things that we look at and what that means and how we do it, so that when more of these tentative maps come before you and subdivision maps come before you, you'll have a frame of reference that may be helpful. If that's helpful, I'm more than happy to schedule it. I think I'll be able to make a kind of a cool presentation for you.
I would appreciate that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Can we push that in March?
And we want a dinner out of that, right, Ron? At the pub, yeah.
I'll tell you what. I will throw down for a dinner. I'll provide pizza.
Pizza?
From the pub?
From Valentino's.
Wait, that's good.
You
know, pizza.
I thought about hitting you, but you're sick, so I don't feel sorry.
I didn't know that. What are you talking about?
Cater.
Talk to me about spaghetti or something.
I don't know if it's a conflict of interest, but let her cater it.
I will throw down for a couple of pizzas if we can do it the next meeting.
Nice.
I would love to do it later. We talked about it, and staff is, and I hope you'll understand, appreciate, staff's a little uneasy about having a workshop and then making a decision on that type of entitlement immediately following.
I see. So you want to separate it.
We would like to do that for you immediately.
Yeah.
And then when things come before you,
you're
which
prepared
will come
for
very quickly, then, you know, we kind of take care of it that way. So I will order pizzas. Let's see, one small personal for the whole crew. I'll take care of that next time. And we'll bring pizzas and sodas and more than happy to do something like that. Yeah. And then we'll go through.
When are you planning for that?
It'll be next
regular meeting is January 15th. We were thinking of doing another special meeting on the 22nd.
Yeah.
So that's 2 weeks away.
22nd?
The 22nd.
So January 15th is canceled?
Canceled.
Yes, it's canceled.
Okay, and then February 5th is?
February 5th.
There's nothing at this time?
Yeah, not at this time. That is subject to change.
Okay, that's subject to change.
Do you think Les Schwab could get on the 5th?
That's possible.
Ron, Emmanuel has open house on the 5th?
Maybe. Yeah, during the day.
During the day?
During the day.
I'm supposed to be attending that.
Yeah, during the day.
Okay.
Yeah.
So if we can do it on the 22nd, that would be ideal for staff, but we could do it on the 5th.
Talking January 22nd?
January 22nd.
Mm-hmm. And there won't be any other items, so it'll just be the workshop.
Yeah, that's super.
Okay, and we'll do it from 5 to 6, and I promise
You should not promise.
Yeah, no
You
promises.
Might should just skip that.
That's
statement.
Your new,
oh, no,
new Year's
I'm
resolution.
Gonna, I, my New no Year's promises. Resolution.
No promises. All right, well, thank you, Kevin.
Okay. 5 to 6.
So do we have any more questions, concerns, comments? So we can adjourn this meeting? All right, so I'm going to go ahead and adjourn the meeting of the Planning Commission special meeting today, which is Thursday, January 8th. Can I get a vote? Is that what it is?
I would. I move that we do so. Yeah.
All right. Could I get a second? All right. Meeting adjourned.
Nice job.
Good job, buddy.